special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
People, what's up? We are here live on the Golong Media Channel on Blog Talk Radio here, and this is the latest episode of the Boxing Source Radio Show here on Monday, July 10th, 2017. I am your host, James Bell, the boxing analyst for the Cold Hard Truth on Sports and for Golong Media. Have articles on the chgonsports.com. Once again, the chgonsports.com, and also run the Boxing Source pages on social media, including Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Here for this episode, if you wanted to call in to talk boxing, you can dial in at 347-237-5539. Once again, it is 347-237-5539. Be able to press the one key and you'll be able to talk in live on the show. We have a few things that we'll be going through in this episode. One is giving updates on the World Boxing Super Series has pretty much been finalized as the brackets have been put together. Over the weekend, they had the draft for that for the cruiserweight and super middleweight divisions. And so you'll have, you know, eight fights, four fights each, you know, for the first round that's coming up within you know, September and October. We will be getting into the fighters that will be participating in that. And also, we will have a special guest here, as we'll have someone that is promoting a product that, you know, helps within, you know, boxing gyms and training and, you know, also, if you're doing exercising, and you know, also something that'll, you know, help with you know, your skin. So we'll have our special guest D Flowers come in to talk about that product here, pretty much around 7:45 Eastern time there. But you know, in the meantime, we'll be, you know, getting into a couple of news and notes before Brother D Flowers gets in here for that 7:45 segment on the show. Just wanted to, you know, touch on a couple of things here that, you know, happened over the course of the weekend. You know, one thing is that, you know, now we, you know, kind of like have things being ironed out for the event that will be on August 26th there, you know, headlined by Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor. On one thing, on one side, you have, you know, the press tour that's going to be going on this week. You'll have the, you know, different locations there. You know, we have the Staples Center in Los Angeles, the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, the SSC Arena in Wembley, over in the UK, and also in Toronto. Most of these, most of these little press tours that they're going to have are sold out. I know that, you know, I've seen that the one at the Barclays Center is sold out, and that means it's you know, pretty much been filled out. In Toronto, they initially said that they were going to have that at the Sony Center in Toronto, but says that, you know, with the demand there, that it's going to be moved from the Sony Center to the Budweiser stage. So over here, over the course of the week, you're going to see these press conferences happen for the Floyd Mayweather, Conor McGregor event. And you'll see that, you know, a lot of people, you know, will be, you know, sitting in there and trying to get into what these two will be getting into in order to promote the upcoming fight there. That's going to be on August 26th. In the meantime, they're trying to, you know, iron out the details as far as the overall event is concerned. Of course, you have that main event, and the rumor was that they would try to have Gervonta Davis as part of that event there on August 26th, trying to see if they could find an opponent. And the initial buzz about who his opponent would be was going to be Orlando Salido, to be his opponent, where he was going to defend the IBF super featherweight championship. But it seems like, you know, over the course of the past few days or so, that Orlando Salido has been sidelined with an injury, and the injury has been a little bit more serious than people have realized. So, you know, he wouldn't have been able to recover in time in order to make this particular fight that would have happened on August 26th. So Gervonta Davis is looking like he's looking for an opponent. And, you know, the buzz around social circles is that, you know, Tevin Farmer has been the guy that says that he wants to step in and be that opponent. I'm not sure if they could, you know, get something that soon to be put together, but we'll see, you know, how that goes, if they're able to, you know, have Tevin Farmer as the guy that will be, you know, part of this event here between Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather. Just getting a caller here early. Here, area code 202. What's going on with you?
Hey, what's going on? It's World Rank checking in. Feeling really good.
Hey there, World Rank. Thanks for calling in there. Just going through a few news and notes before I get my special guest in here around 7:45. I was just talking about the press tour that's about to start up here. You know, that's going to be starting at the Staples Center and then going over to Toronto, and then from Toronto to Brooklyn, and then Brooklyn to the UK. And also, you know, Gervonta Davis, you know, possibly being involved with that card. But Salido, who is rumored to be his opponent, may end up being out of it because of his injury being more serious than people realize. So, you know, any thoughts about, you know, Gervonta Davis as far as, like, you know, any possible opponents for him? I brought up Tevin Farmer because, you know, a Farmer was saying something on Twitter saying, like, hey, I see that you might not have an opponent, you know, for that day, so why not see me jump on there?
So anytime I get a chance to pat myself on the back, I always do. But his last fight with Leon Walsh, we had talked about after the fight, his next opponent, and the person I said was Tevin Farmer, because if you look at the division, there isn't much there. You know, that's a reasonable fight to make. I'm actually surprised that the Salido fight was even talked about. I think Salido isn't necessarily the main promoter for him. Isn't either Top Rank or Golden Boy. I know he has worked previously in the past with him, but I think he has a Mexican promoter. So, you know, if he can get that fight, you know, instead of Lomachenko, that's another, another way that we can size those two guys up. But, yeah, I still think Farmer's the leading candidate. I just think the fight makes sense. I said it then and I said it now. I still think I'm not sure what other name could be out there that would even, be reasonable if the Salido fight can't be made.
Yeah, I mean, you have, Tevin Farmer there within the IBF rankings, and there's, nobody there ranked at number one and number two, I think, because of, Davis being the highest rated contender for the IBF Super Featherweight Championship. I think he won it as a, guy that was coming in to beat Pedraza. So he beat Pedraza as a highly ranked contender and then beat Liam Walsh, who was like then the number one guy in those latest rankings. So you really don't have anybody that's rated number one or number two. And, Tevin Farmer is not that far behind there in the rankings. So he would be, a better choice of an opponent to have than Orlando Salido. And to me, I just felt that Salido just was not a good matchup, for Gervonta Davis. I think that Davis would be able to use his youth as a determining factor to have multiple advantages over Salido in this case.
I think Farmer is the it makes more sense for him to be on this card, but I think Salido would be a good choice for two reasons. Of course, the barometer with Lomachenko to see how good he did, even though this is a more faded version of Salido, but also the aspect of the action that and the action style-wise that Salido would bring rather than Farmer. Farmer is more of a boxer. Davis would try to, come forward, but he wouldn't necessarily have a partner that would be so willing, where Salido, the only thing he knows how to do is be front-footed. So in terms of style-wise, if you're trying to get eyes to them, in terms of the style of fight, Salido makes the most sense. But Farmer, because of their history, the trash that they've talked over social media and some of the videos, Farmer is somewhat a known commodity. It makes sense from that aspect. But again, if you want to bring, I don't know if you need to bring anybody else, or if you could bring anybody else to buy the pay per view fight. Style wise, Salido or Davis is a better style fight.
Yes, it would be a better style fight there for Gervonta Davis, and it's something where it'll have a little bit more buzz as far as like the overall card is concerned, as they recently announced like the overall price for the pay-per-view, and it's going to be $89.95 for standard definition and $99.95 for high definition. So I'm trying to see like how they're going to be able to work this out here in order to get that going. But we'll see if we could touch back on that in a little bit. But right now, I'm going to see if I could have you on hold here for a little bit as we'll get our special guest in. He is coming in here, and he has his product that he was going to talk about on this show here. So I'm going to get our special guest in here, D Flowers. How you doing this evening?
Hey, how you doing, man?
Doing good. Just wanted to, get right into it. You have this product here that, is has very various benefits and can be used in various different occasions. This product is called Sweatcessful, and it's like a sweat cream. So I wanted you to, get into it a little bit, and then, I'll have a little bit more questions after you introduce the product.
Okay, yeah, sweat. So it's a sweat cream that usually me and a business partner, we came up with it probably like a year and a half ago, and we were just using it for some of our clients, which were boxers at the time. And it was, you know, a lot of people were using it, and they really enjoyed it. And what the cream does, it, like, when you rub it on any part of your body, let's say, for example, you want to lose weight in your abdominal area or on your arms, you'll rub the cream on it, and you will see you will be sweating profusely on your arms, your stomach, wherever you put the cream at. So it's designed to help promote weight loss. And then it also like, helps you lose a lot of water weight. So a lot of boxers in Las Vegas, when I was out in Vegas, were using the cream so they could cut weight really fast, like during training camp. And it also moisturizes your skin, and it protects your skin. It removes stretch marks. It's smoothing out scars, bruises. If you got scaly feet, it will even moisturize your feet. So it's an all-around product, an all-purpose product that you can use. But it was geared towards boxers at first, since they are the ones that try to lose weight excessively. But now we are trying to promote it so everybody can use it, like get any people in general that work out and want to lose weight. They have been using the cream here where I'm located now. I'm located in Florida, so I have been dealing with a lot of, like, just the general public, and a lot of them have been buying the cream and everything, and they really like it. Great feedback, good testimonials and everything. So yeah, that's the cream. It's just, like I said, it's a sweat cream that you can use for working out, and you don't just necessarily have to do boxing workouts. You can do any workout. You can jog on the treadmill. You can walk. You can wear it at work, or whatever you want to do, you can wear the cream, and you will see a big difference in how you were sweating, sweat off weight, because a lot of people have been using it. I gave out a few samples a few months ago and let a lot of people use it and sample it, and they just came back and wanted to get more, you know, so it shows that it is working. It's an excellent product. It don't break out the skin or anything, and most of the ingredients are from, like, a cocoa tree, which you can only – the cocoa tree is probably in a rare place like the Amazon rainforest or something like that. So you can't even get this plant here in America. So that would make the cream so special, that if the cocoa comes from a special tree, that one of the main ingredients that we use in the product. So yeah, this sweat cream, sweat festival.
Yeah, so like you were saying here, you said, like, it has, like, various benefits, you know, there as far as, like, for weight loss and, like, getting rid of water weight for, like, boxers that want to, you know, get, you know, try to, like, cut down weight before they prepare for fights. Like, here in general, it just seems like something that, you know, that it just, like, assists as far as, like, you know, helping you work out as far as, like, you know, having more energy or being able to push energy out of the body while you're working out. And it was like you were saying, you didn't necessarily have to be, like, using it for boxing, but you could use it for jogging, walking, exercise, and lifting weights and that type of thing.
Yes, exactly. So that's why we're trying to gear it towards any and everybody now, because, like I said, first we were just using it for boxers only, because we were mostly around boxers and training boxers. And then we just got out more with the general public, and some of the people were just asking about it, and we just, you know, gave them samples. And it was a lot of people were catching it, like, hey, we want to use this product. Hey, we want to use the product. So when they used it and were doing their daily workouts with it, like I said, it could have been anything. It could have been jumping jacks, whatever they do at home. You don't even necessarily have to box, and they were seeing major results the same as a boxer. You know, boxers see – anybody use it will see results as long as you stay consistent with using it, working out. And within, like, a few weeks, you will see a big difference. You will feel – the first time you use it, you will feel your body sweating probably 10 times more than you can even imagine, you know. So, and all sweat means you losing weight, you know, and that's the goal when you're working out, cut weight, lose weight, if that's your main goal, you know. So the sweat cream is have been really working for a lot of people.
Right. Great. Now, you did mention one of the key ingredients within the sweat cream, and that is, cocoa. Like, I've seen, like, when, like, many different products, like, use cocoa butter, that's, like, a, you know, like, an additive, you know, as far as, like, skin moisturizing and that type of thing. But, you know, here you kind of, like, push this as, like you were saying, that it helps stimulate perspiration. And so,
yes,
you know, getting rid of all that water weight kind of, like, helps out a lot as far as, like, you know, getting once you do exercises and things like that. Because one of the most determinant things about people exercising or working out is trying to cut the fat, you know. So,
yes, exactly.
You know, having something like that, you know, coming from the cacao tree, you know, really helps in reference to, you know, those, like, doing things for exercise. But see if you can get into a little bit more as far as, like, how it moisturizes the body as well, because you can use it inside the gym or, you know, while working out, but also you kind of
yeah.
push this as something that you use as far as, like, you know, everyday use.
Yeah, you can use it as a moisturizer, like a lotion. Like I said, for if you have dry skin, and some people do have dry skin, dry scaly, I call it scaly feet, but dry feet. Dry elbows,
mm-hmm.
you know, you could use it as a moisturizer just for your body. You don't necessarily have to work out, but when you use it for that, you want to use like a thin layer. You don't want to use a lot. So you use a lot when you work out because, you know, when you sweat, it sweats the cream off as well. So you use more when you work out. But yeah, you most definitely can use it for like dry, you know, dry skin. And with some of the ingredients in it, which is cocoa from the cacao tree, is in it. It helps moisturize the skin. And the big products have cocoa, you know, like cocoa butter, for example. It's for moisturizing, so it has
right.
something similar in that as well. So it is it's for most moisturizing. It can help for dry skin. Like if you live in the like up north or something where it gets really cold, you get dry, your face get dry, your hands. You can use it for that, the moisturizing, and it will keep it moisturized for a very long time, because when you're using it during training, you would be surprised after. You sweat a whole lot, and you still moisturize. Because you would think when you sweat, you're sweating all the cream off, but it's still moisturized. So once it dissolves in your skin, it's in there. It moisturizes your skin throughout the workout. Even after the workout, you would still be able to rub the cream. Be like, oh, man, my skin is still soft and smooth. It's then dried out. So it's a great product, and it's long-lasting as well until you wash it off, at least when you take a shower. But you can use it for different purposes, like for your hands, your face,
right.
your elbows. Well, your feet, whatever you need to use it for, it's an all-purpose cream.
Yeah, I was going to get into that also as far as, like, other, you know, uses. It says, like, you can use it for scars and bruises, you know, that are in the
mm-hmm.
body that it, like, helps with healing purposes there. So you wanted to touch on that as well?
Yeah, it's an ingredient, like, I can't speak too much on this, like a mineral oil ingredient that is inside of the cream, and what it does, as you rub it on your stretch marks, it actually removes and smoothen out stretch marks. That's a big thing for people who work out. If they either get bigger and get smaller, well, bigger get smaller, or smaller and get bigger, they get stretch marks, and it helps with that a whole lot. It blends the skin together, it tones it out. If you have bruises, scars, and you use the cream often, it would start blending the scar in with your actual skin tone, because it evening out your skin tone from another ingredient that is inside of the cream. And, you know, like I said, people that use it, they really love it. They have been seeing the results, especially a lot of women who have stretch marks, and they have been using it. One of my clients in Las Vegas, I was training, and she had psoriasis.
Mm-hmm.
It was something like her skin was breaking out with, I guess it was a hereditary or something. And she was using the cream, and she was surprised. She was like, hey, the cream kind of smoothing out my psoriasis, you know. And I was like, wow, you know, I didn't know it would do it for, like, a skin disease or something like that. And it was working for her skin. But when she stopped using it, it came back. So it shows the cream did help tone it down some for the blemishes she had on her legs and everything from the psoriasis. So, yeah, so the cream, like I said, it's all perfect. It works for everything. And like I said, the main reason people get it is for weight loss and stretch marks. A lot of people want to lose weight, and a lot of people want to lose those stretch marks, you know. And a lot of people, you know, they like it. The clients, they love it. They always call and get more and more. They tell their friends to tell their friends to tell their friend, you know, and word of mouth is pretty good, you know, when they're talking about the cream.
Great. Now, I'm going to see if I'm going to have, like, I have two callers in here with me. I got an area code 205 and 202. I'm going to see if, you know, either one of them have questions in reference to this sweat
successful sweat cream. See if they have any questions about it, any additional questions. I'm going to start with area code 205. You're here live here on the Boxing Source with us. You had any questions for Brother D. Flowers here?
Well, I guess I would ask, this is Mike, by the way, how does one get the product?
Well, you get the product, you could go to the website. The website is sweatcessful.com, sweatcessful, C-E-S-S-F-U-L.com. And you can just go right to the website, and you could purchase the cream. You could read a little about it, and, you know, and you can get purchased right off the website, sweatcessful.com. And actually, it's an Instagram. I have an Instagram page as well, sweatcessful, but the website is where you can purchase the cream.
Gotcha.
All right. And World Rank, you had anything for Brother D. Flowers?
Mr. Flowers, I want to ask is, can you talk about a little bit about the size and the texture of the product, and also how well does it work with your workout clothes?
You say your workout clothing?
Yeah, does it, you know, how does it work well with it in terms of staining or anything like that?
Yeah, it don't stain at all because it's a white cream, but it doesn't have any dye in it. So it won't stain your clothes at all if it's a white cream. And pretty much you might as well say a clear cream because when you sweat, it don't sweat out no type of dye. There's no color inside of the product. And, for example, most people – use it, and you know when you sweat, only thing you probably see on your shirt is probably the sweat itself, but no color stains or anything, no dye come out the cream or nothing like that. So you can pretty much use it. You can wear anything you want to wear. You don't have to worry about, you know, messing up none of your clothes during the training when you're using the cream. And when you're using the cream, you can also cover it with, if you have a body belt, you can use a body belt to cover it. Or you could tuck your shirt in so you could keep the heat inside of the areas you want to target. For example, if you put it around your abdominal area, you tuck your shirt in and it'll keep the heat inside of your, you know, in your abdominal area so you can lose weight quicker, 10 times faster once you start sweating.
Right, great. And, you know, like you were saying before, you know, people could order this online through the website. That's www.sweatcessful.com. And I'm going to, you know, post that website, you know, on the Facebook page and also on the Instagram page so people could be able to access it online, you know, on the pages. And then they'll be able to see where they could order the sweat cream online, where they could, you know, get, you know, sets of one, two, or three jars of the sweat cream over on the website there. So they'll be able to, you know, get as many as they want and, you know, try out the product and, you know, be able to work out using the sweat cream right there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I really appreciate it.
Oh, no doubt there, Brother Flowers, no doubt. Thanks for coming on to talk about the product. Then, you know, we'll be pushing the product through the social media networks out here. So, once again, folks, you have D. Flowers here talking about the Sweat Sexful Sweat Cream. And be sure to visit the website, sweatsexful.com, in order to order the products there. So, we'll be like continuing on here with the show. AD, if you're welcome to, you know, hang out and talk about boxing with us as we go through news and notes out here if you wanted to.
Okay. And then another thing, for anyone that want to get the cream and have any questions, if you go to the website, you can always email me directly if you have any questions about the product, or you can find me on Instagram at Sweatcessful on Instagram. I can answer any questions. Any concerns you may have.
All right, no doubt. All right, so just wanted to get into this thing here with the boxing talk is, you know, we had the World Boxing Super Series that was announced They had the draft, you know, over the weekend. So you pretty much have like a set where you'll have eight fighters from the cruiserweight division and you'll have, you know, eight fighters from the super middleweight division that will be participating in this World Boxing Super Series. You had the brackets that pretty much happened over the weekend, and it's looking like it's shaping up to be fairly well there with these brackets. You have the, you know, a lot of the cruiserweights there that kind of you know, shaped up. You have a multiple champions that'll be out there, especially within the cruiserweight division. You have like Murat Gassiev that's going to be fighting. He'll be fighting Christoph Willardzik in the quarterfinals there. So you have, you know, Murat Gassiev there that's going to be participating in it. You have, you know, Alexander Usyk that's going to be participating in it. He will be, you know, facing the, you know, former champion in at the cruiserweight, Marco Huck. So that's going to be a very, to me, that's probably the best, that's probably going to end up being the best fight of the whole series, even whether it's going to be, you know, a final or not. They're looking to, you know, have those two guys facing each other in the series. I think, you know, you have the champion, who is it? Brightest is supposed to be participating in it, as he is, you know, the WBC champion. So he's going to be one of the guys that's going to be participating in the World Boxing Super Series there. So within a cruiserweight, they have like a very diverse set of fighters out there that's going to be participating in it. I'm going to see if, like, World Rank, you got something for the cruiserweight part of the Super Series? You wanted to talk about those quarterfinal matchups that are happening?
Not one in particular. I mean, all of the fights are going to be good, exciting fights. The one thing about the cruiserweight ones is they have a lot of punches in there. A couple of guys with over 80% knockout. So I expect a lot of the fights to end in knockouts. They're good competitive fights. I don't think they're as competitive as I think they're more competitive than the super middleweight ones. They really don't have any prospects in it. They basically got either contenders some form of champions in there. So it's a good mix of people. Unfortunately, there's not any U.S. fighters in there. Not even sure if it has any U.K. fighters in there. Very European-based. But it's going to be very exciting. I don't know what the interest is, again, in the U.S., because there's not a lot of big names in there. A lot of people from the U.S. haven't seen a lot of these fighters. So they're good competitive fights. I just wonder what the viewership would be like in the United States for these fighters that aren't really known here.
Yeah, there really isn't that much participation as far as, like, you know, U.S. is concerned. I mean, in both the cruiserweight and the super middleweight tournaments. I mean, for super middleweight, they do have Rob Brent that's going to be part of it. But, you know, other than that, you really don't have much that's going on there. Like I was saying, you had, you know, Murat Gassiev going up against Christoph Larzik, that's going to be, you know, there. You have Usyk going up against Marco Huck. You have Maris Brightus going up against Mike Perez, who's from Cuba, but, you know, fights based out of Ireland. And then, you know, you have the last one there with Yunir Dordakos going up against Dmitry Kudryashov. And, you know, Dordakos from Cuba and Kudryashov is from Russia. So you really don't have, you know, much as far as the U.S. has been involved in either one of these tournaments there, especially here within the cruiserweight division. So it is going to be interesting to see who is going to, as far as like TV coverage, who is going to end up, you know, picking up here on the U.S. side, because that, like you were saying, there really isn't that much that's, you know, really known, you know, out of here. So that's pretty much on that cruiserweight side. On the super middleweight side, you have the top seed there, George Groves, saying that he's going to be facing Jamie Cox in the quarterfinals. And then Callum Smith, who was supposed to fight Anthony Durrell, pretty much stepped away from that fight to participate in the Super Series. He's going to be facing Eric Skoglund. And then the winner of the upcoming fight between Chris Eubank Jr. and Arthur Abraham will be fighting Avni Yildirim from Turkey. And then what was left over was Jürgen Brammer going up against Rob Brandt, who's the, you know, only American that's participating in this Super Series here. All right, Mike Grady, you got something to say about the Super Series tournament?
Not too much. Yeah, I don't have too much to say. I guess it'll be more exciting once I see the fights. But on my, like, first inclination.
Yeah, I mean, it's still, like, something where it's, you know, a lot of fighters out there that, you know, a lot of people don't know about. And it's going to be interesting because, you know, with this tournament, they have, you know, up to $50 million that was, you know, put up or put together for these tournaments to go down. So, you know, I'm wondering how it's going to, you know, come out to, you know, help out whoever ends up being the winners of these, you know, fights here in the Super Series. I mean, there's a couple of guys that, you know, people have heard of, you know, within the super middleweight division, George Groves, Jürgen Brammers, Eric Skoglund, you know, Chris Eubank Jr. and Arthur Abraham, and also, you know, Callum Smith. But, you know, as far as like an overall, like, world view of these fighters, it's not like, you know, how they had the Super Six tournament in the super middleweight division where you had, you know, a lot more people that were a lot more recognized, one, and then two, it had a lot more American involvement in it, whether, you know, it was at the beginning of the tournament or while that tournament was going on. You still had, like, a few more guys that are from, you know, America, or, you know, those that were known in America before that tournament even started. So that's, like, the stark difference between that Super Six that happened years ago in this World Boxing Super Series.
Yeah, I don't know, but what a lot of the guys, like, top contender, like, guys, when they, like, top whatever guys too in the last tournament?
I mean, like, they were, like, top contenders, but they held title belts though, you know. So you had like guys that were the, you know, IBF champion, WBA champion, and WBC champion. But I mean, even with that, it seemed like they were champion for a good little while before they even took part in that Super Six tournament.
Yeah.
You know, so that was the thing about it. So, like, once they, you know, already participated in it, or, you know, got into it, then they were already known, whether, you know, it was through their professional ranks or the amateur ranks, because you had, like, you know, Durrell's, you know, be part of it as well.
I think it's kind of funny because if you go back to that Super Six, Andre Ward at that time was still considered a prospect. He hadn't really fought or beat anybody, and he wasn't even favored to win it. At that time, many people wasn't even picking him to win it. People were picking, you know, Kessler and Abraham, because those were the main commodities at that time. You know, Ward was really what tested, and, you know, that's where, you know, he basically made his name. You know, he had the gold medal and, you know, and that, but as a professional fighter, he hadn't really fought anyone of note until he joined the Super Six. So it gives guys that type, you know, it gives guys like Eric Skoglund and Jamie Cox and Avril, I can't pronounce his name, the guy from Turkey. It gives those guys, you know, an opportunity to be seen because a lot of people haven't seen these guys. You know, the hardcores may have, you know, seen them on YouTube or Sky Sports or whatever, but most of the mainstream haven't really seen these guys. Just like, you know, most people didn't know what to expect from Andre Ward at that time. You know, even though he was, you know, again, he was a gold medalist at that time, people basically remember him for getting dropped by Darnell Boone. So, you know, and he came out to be the best super middleweight, in my opinion, ever just by doing that super six. Cause, so this platform that these guys get will, you know, even in losses, you know, a lot of those fights you remember. You remember Abraham DQing Darrell. You remember Jermaine Taylor getting knocked out a few times in the tournament. You remember Andre Ward dominating everybody that came in his way. And, you know, those fights, you know, the Kessler-Frotch two fights, you know, those fights, everybody in that tournament basically, you know, made a name for themselves. So hopefully this goes the same way as that tournament, even though there's not much U.S. representation. You know, even Rob Brandt, he's getting in there in the tournament. How many of us have seen him? Even though he's from the U.S., you know, many of us haven't seen him fight. And he's a, you know, he's an undefeated prospect. So these guys get the opportunity to be seen, you know, and even in, you know, even in losses, they might, you know, upgrade their profile.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they have that chance to where they'll be able to be exposed a little bit more as far as like the largest markets as far as boxing is concerned. When the, you know, UK television markets pick up these fights, and, you know, once the U.S. Market picks up these fights, then, you know, more people will be able to know them and see them and see how good they are. And so you see how, like, it worked for Andre Ward as he ended up winning that, you know, the Super Six tournament. See how that, you know, kind of like boosted him. And so we got to see, like, how this will, you know, end up boosting the winner of these tournaments here. These are World Boxing Super Series to see how that works out. But I mean, to me, it kind of like seems like the one for the cruiserweight division is a little bit more, I would say, what, quote unquote, star studded, because, you know, some of the guys we already know about already, you know, with Usyk being there as part of it, and, you know, title holders, Maris Bridas, being in it, and Marco Huck, who is also a former champion himself. You know, so at least, you know, with that one, it kind of looks like it'll end up being like a unified cruiserweight champion, or pretty much an undisputed cruiserweight champion by the time that one is done.
Yeah, you can look at the cruiserweight one and say they got basically every top guy from that division. Like I said, they had four champions. Basically, everybody who holds a belt. I know Doritos has the WBA, but he has an interim, but it's still, you know, so they have the BC, the IBF, the WBO, and the WBA interim. They basically have all the top fighters, where super middleweight, you know, they do, you know, the Darrell brothers not in it, Benavidez, DeGale. So they're missing a couple of fighters, but they have more prospects. You know, guys that, you know, trying to get a chance and moving up in the ranking. So Eubank Jr. is going to be interesting to see how he does in the Abraham fight. And I'm guessing he's going to win that and probably join the tournament. You know, I also heard that they tried to get Callum Smith and because I know he's supposed to fight Anthony Darrell, and they tried to get both of them in, but I think Darrell declined. And I think Sauerland, who was one of the promoters for this tournament, said he offered Anthony Darrell more money than he would get in the Callum Smith fight to join the tournament, but he declined. So it would have been good to see a known U.S. commodity in there, but we got good fighters in there.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, because that would have been – that's weird, because it was like I was mentioning there, as far as, like, the overall investment towards this World Boxing Super Series was, like, $50 million. So, you know, I think there would have been a good amount of money to spread around for all of these fighters to participate.
I think in the U.S.
kind of like yeah, I just said I just found it like interesting that, you know, Darrell wouldn't be involved with it, you know, knowing how much money is involved with the tournament and what could be in store for him if he was able to win it.
Well, I think Darrell, as we've seen over the years, you know, I like Darrell as a fighter, but I feel like he's had his best years. And maybe because he has been fighting tougher competition, maybe. But if it's the right Darrell I'm thinking of, he definitely had some rough goals in the last couple of fights I've seen him in.
Yeah, I mean, he's been in there, you know, with a few good guys within that division. He only has, like, that, you know, that one loss. So, but he's, you know, had only that one loss to Badu Jack. He's, you know, had a couple of fights there with Saki Obika. You know, but other than that, it hasn't, like, really been like he's had a very, very tough career. But he was kind of, like, getting towards – you know, his peak where he'd be able to get, you know, big fights. But, you know, with him backing out of this, it seems like, you know, now they got him in a fight in Los Angeles against David Benavidez for the super middleweight title. So he kind of passed on that tournament, but the super middleweight title is still, you know, going to be on the line and be there for him to get against Benavidez since, you know, that it was vacated. So, I mean, that's the thing about it. So I think that's what it was. I think he was saying that, maybe, you know, if the super middleweight title is still going to be vacant and I still fight for it, you know, why would I, you know, participate in this tournament when I could, you know, still be able to get this belt?
Yeah, I think it's one of those cases where are you choosing money over belts? Like, because I know he's not going to get paid the money that he would get paid to be in this tournament to face Benavidez. I mean, Anthony Darrell, you know, Darrell is a good fighter. He's probably at this stage better than Andre. Andre is probably the one Mike was referring to. He's had his wars, and I think he might be a little past it. But Anthony, you know, he had his bout with cancer and was able to come back. So he's still really still has, you know, trying to make his name in the game. You know, he's been a world champion, but he hasn't really had the defining fights that Andre's had.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, Andre Darrell has been the one that, you know, has been, you know, part of these tournaments and gone against the tougher competition. He did, you know, have the fights for the super middleweight titles against tough competition. You know, while, you know, Anthony was able to win the WBC version of the title. But end up losing it to, you know, Badu Jack. His brother was able to, you know, go up against, you know, DeGale, but end up losing that title fight to DeGale. So, yeah, I think that, you know, him with Anthony Darrell, he might have, like, tried to go to get this WBC title and see if he'll be able to be successful holding that title there. All right. Just a reminder here, the call into the show is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press 1 key to get on to and be able to talk live on the show. Real quick, just wanted to add in another news thing here that happened over the course of the week. They had, for some strange reason, the World Boxing Organization called for a review of the scores that happened in the WBO welterweight title fight between Manny Pacquiao and Jeff Horn, where Jeff Horn got the unanimous decision win over Manny Pacquiao to win the WBO welterweight championship. But for some reason, the World Boxing Organization wanted to review the scores. It was saying here through the report that the WBO doesn't have the power to reverse the judge's decision based on discretion, as it could only be revoked when fraud or violation of law has occurred, and they said it wasn't relevant in the case. So, I mean, to me, it just seems like it was just something pointless. I mean, it's not like something where they could have changed the win to a no contest or the win to a loss for Jeff Horn, but it just seemed like, you know, when people kind of like protested against the fight, and Manny Pacquiao was talking about, you know, what happened with the decision, they kind of wanted to step in and say that they would want to review the scores of the fight. But to me, what's done is done. They have Jeff Horn here as the winner of the fight. So my thing is what's going to be next for Manny Pacquiao? To me, I wouldn't be surprised one bit if they have a rematch there over in Australia. I think that, you know, it was a very lucrative fight for all parties involved, specifically for Bob Arum at Top Rank. So to me, I say, like, you know, with it being that successful, I wouldn't be surprised if they have Jeff Horn fight Manny Pacquiao once again, especially because you have Jeff Horn being there in Australia, and you have Manny Pacquiao, you know, over in the Philippines. It's, you know, not very far there from Australia. So for Bob Arum's case, he wouldn't see any other fight that makes, you know, more financial sense to him than to have a rematch between those two. And of course, like, you know, right after the fight, I just, you know, found it, you know, real messed up that he couldn't have Manny Pacquiao face Terrence Crawford before this happened. So any more thoughts about, you know, the ramifications of what happened between Jeff Horn and Manny Pacquiao from either of y'all?
So I say, I mean, like you said, it was a waste of time. If the WBO wants to do something, they should just install Manny Pacquiao as the mandatory again. I said before, I don't care really what Pacquiao do. I don't really care what Mayweather do. Am I going to watch? Yeah, because I'm a boxing junkie and I need my fix. But for the most part, I mean, I don't care. You know, if you're not fighting Terrence Crawford, you know, you're just wasting time. So, you know, I don't really, you know, it's the WBO is wasting time. I mean, if they're going to rematch, I'm going to watch it, but I don't really care for it.
All right, Mike Grady, you got something on it?
Well, I mean, people can't get mad at Jeff Horn for fighting his fight, you know. I mean, as we said last time, who implemented their plan? Like, I told myself I was going to go back and watch the fight without the commentary just to get away from the bias. Because, I mean, when I watched the fight, I mean, we all fall subject to this. I quite naturally thought Manny Pacquiao won the fight, but I didn't score. I just went off the eye test. I just went off how I felt. But I re-realized that that's the worst way to say somebody won a fight. I mean, you have to actually sit there and score it, because I know had I saw the Timothy Bradley Pacquiao one fight, or had I saw what's another close fight? Had I saw any other close fight, you know, I could have just eye test been like, oh, this other person won, but you got to sit down and score it. So, but then I realized,
yeah, like War Kovalev won.
Like War Kovalev won, but then I realized I could care less about this fight, so I probably won't go back and score it. Like, unless I just randomly am bored one day and I'm like, oh, I don't have anything else in life to do, I probably won't go back and score it, but maybe a year from now I'll probably go back and score it.
Can I ask y'all a question about scoring? When people like watch a fight, and I only watch most fights once. Do you guys think when you go back and watch a fight, you're more biased than you watched it the first time because you're looking for something that may or may not be there?
That's a good question there. I kind of look at each round to see like what if there was like anything that I missed or if there's like something that could like change how it would score a round. But you know, I kind of look at things as far as a round by round basis. You know, going by you know the standard rules of a scoring system like effective aggression, ring generalship, and how boxers like control the pace of the fight. You know, and they were like in the thing with that Pacquiao Horn fight is that it was kind of difficult to score, but it wasn't difficult to score as like say like I bring up War Kovalev won, because the thing about it was that in this Horn Pacquiao fight, it wasn't like there was anything that you could really see that was like clear cut where somebody was a more aggressive person in that particular round, except for round 9, that was clearly, you know, Pacquiao round. But, you know, other than that, it was like, you know, either you had somebody that wasn't really aggressive, was very sloppy in their approach. Because like I was saying last week, Jeff Horn was aggressive, but it was like an uncontrolled and awkward aggression. That when he punched or when he approached Manny Pacquiao, he missed a lot. He was like way off. So it's like, how can you score something for him if he's not looking good and doing it?
Because I go back to the
I remember what I said.
So I'm going back to the World Kovalev 1 fight, and I've only watched that fight once. And I scored an 8-4 for Kovalev. Now, what I do see people do is they have an opinion after the fight, well, this person won. And then it doesn't match up to what the masses may think. So they'll go back and say, well, let me watch it again. And then they give the person who the masses thought won the fight, they'll give them more of the benefit of the doubt than they did the initial time watching. So most of the time you'll go back and you'll watch the fight and you'll say this person won, and then you'll never go back and watch it. Most people don't never go back and watch it twice and say they scored it the same way.
One of the things is that, you know, watching it live or, you know, watching it for the first time is you're kind of like scoring it as the fight goes on. So it's like, you know, right there live. But once you like see it again, you have those opportunities where you could pause it mid rounds or pause it at the end of the round or go back and re-review it. You know, that way you could try to see if there was like anything that you missed. So like a lot of people that rewatch the fight kind of like score it differently because they see it multiple times in that one sitting and then like could see something different that they didn't see when they saw the fight live.
For me, I typically don't get me wrong, my opinion can change on certain fights. Like I had quite a few even rounds in the Kovalev War at one, but like how I try to make it as objectively as possible is breaking the round up into thirds. And then for me, it's like who win the first minute, who win the second minute, who win the third minute. And quite naturally, I make an allowance for if there's like a lot more damage done. But let's take, for example, Timothy Bradley and Manny Pacquiao. To me, Timothy Bradley was throwing punches for 2 minutes of the round, and then Manny Pacquiao land one solid punch at the end of the round, which for me didn't win him the round if Timothy Bradley, you know, threw most of the punches and won third solidly of the fight, you know, one punch, which is one third of the fight, which didn't hurt him, didn't win him the, you know, the round, versus the scenario where, this scenario I'm about to mention is more difficult, but Timothy Bradley and Provotnikov, where Bradley would be winning most of the round and Provotnikov, like, hurt him really, really bad. It's kind of like, yeah, you kind of got to give Provotnikov the edge, sort of, you know, in that round. But then it just depends on, because one of them rounds, Timothy Bradley, like, really just, like, landed a lot of, like, thunder. And then Provotnikov landed, like, just a real good punch. So, but for me, I typically score, for the most part, the same. And then if I am unsure, or, like, with Kovalev Ward, I always put an even round if I'm unsure. And then, you know, because if nothing happens in the first round, nothing happens in the second round, or the second, third of the round, and then the last third, nothing happens, and I'm like, that's like nobody did anything. So it's a tie to me. It's an even round. But I typically keep it. I feel like I'm consistent. I don't think I ever went back and just like drastically, oh, this person won drastically different because, you know, this or that. Yeah, I think I'm pretty consistent, you know, just objectively trying to look at it. But, oh, I will say now, sometimes I have to make sure I get my emotions out of it too, because, you know, when you first watch a fight, you know, you can be emotional, like, if you like a fighter. So I never score Deontay Wilder's fights.
Right, right. Yeah, I kind of like put that into well, you don't really need to. Well, so far, you didn't really need to score the Wilder fights because, I mean, those fights don't go to a decision. So you didn't even really have to worry about all that right now. Now, we just stepping in here to the overtime section of the show. We got like a few news and notes here within the boxing to go through. First off, here in the middleweight division, got like two things that's kind of like related to each other. One is the WBO middleweight champion Billy Joe Saunders had announced that he is going to fight in London on September 16th. He did, you know, have something that was supposed to be set up for him, but he wasn't able to get that to go down because of the issue with his opponent that pretty much got arrested for very, very, very bad things there. So he needed another opponent. And it was looking like it was going to be Billy Joe Saunders versus David Lemieux, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen on September 16th. There. So it was going to be the alternative is that Billy Joe Saunders will fight Willie Monroe Jr. in London. And so you have Willie Monroe Jr. who was there as a former, who was an opponent for unified middleweight champion Gennady Golovkin, is now the number five guy in the WBO rankings, will be facing Billy Joe Saunders. And as a result, we're seeing here that David Lemieux said that he passed on the fight between him and Billy Joe Saunders, and he's looking to try to go after Miguel Cotto. And I find that very weird, one, because, you know, Miguel Cotto has a fight between him and that he has with a common guy. That's number one. And then number two, I find that weird because while David Lemieux was trying to see if he could pursue Billy Joe Saunders, there was somebody else in the middleweight division that didn't mind having a fight with him, and that was Daniel Jacobs. And so to me, I'm like, well, if you can't get the Saunders fight, why don't you go on ahead and end up fighting Daniel Jacobs? But he's saying that Lemieux is saying that Miguel Cotto seems like he wants to have that fight between him and Miguel Cotto soon after this fight between Cotto and Yoshihiro Kamagai that's going to happen in August 26th there. So first I'm going to start off with Mike Grady, your reaction to this middleweight situation here, and then I'm going to follow up with Royal Ranks.
So he don't have a fight. You say he was waiting on Miguel Cotto. Miguel Cotto got a fight. Daniel Jacobs said he'll fight him, but then he ain't trying to fight Daniel Jacobs.
Yeah, so the thing was, it was that, like, Daniel Jacobs was, you know, kind of like looking for somebody to fight, and he said, hey, David Lemieux, why don't me and you, you know, get it on? And Lemieux was saying, well, you know, I got other plans, and, you know, I'm kind of like, you know, almost in line to be fighting, you know, Billy Joe Saunders for the WBO belt since, you know, Avtando Cosizde isn't available for Billy Joe Saunders to fight. But, you know, now since that kind of like fell through with Saunders picking Willie Monroe Jr., it's like, oh, well, I mean, for the time being, Dave Lemieux doesn't have, you know, a fight lined up. So I don't see why he can't, you know, fight Daniel Jacobs. I mean, that would be a very good fight, number one. And, you know, it would put him in line to, you know, one, fight Billy Joe Saunders with more money on, with more money involved, or two, get the winner of, you know, Canelo versus Golovkin. So I don't see why that fight wouldn't be an enticing fight for David Lemieux not to take.
Well, I think that Daniel Jacobs probably should be a better boxer than David Lemieux. And I think David Lemieux probably recognizes that. David Lemieux probably recognizes that the dude can hurt him. And, you know, like, why would I take that risk? Why would he take a risk? And it's really, like, not that much reward, per se, other than just, like, you know, notoriety and stuff like that. But as far as the Willie Monroe and the Billy Joe Saunders fight, I think that this is Willie Monroe's shot. If he's going to do it, then this is definitely his shot to do it. Because, you know, the mother dogs up there, I just question, you know, I'm just not sure. And so if he's going to do it, this is going to be his shot. So he better come in and get his mind right. And, you know, if he faces a little adversity, fight through it and you know, bite down and win the title. Because, I mean, y'all think he got many more shots other than this? I mean, people might fight him, yeah, but I think this is probably his best shot to actually.
This is his opportunity right here because, I mean, with that exception of, you know, getting the fights first with Brian Vera and then the unified title fight against Gennady Golovkin, he really, you know, hasn't had much interest from a lot of these high-profile opponents in the middleweight division. They tried to, you know, get something put together with them last year, but he ended up fighting, you know, Gabe Rosado for one of those minor middleweight titles last year on September 17th. So, I mean, it's something here where he's going to have this shot to win another version of a middleweight title. And if he's not, you know, able to be successful here, then I really don't see, you know, what other shot that he would, you know, probably have to go after one of those belts unless if he, you know, in another fight, like, beats one of the major contenders there. Like, if he, like, for example, if he loses this fight and beats a David Lemieux or, you know, with Daniel Jacobs or, you know, somebody of that level, then he might have another shot. But other than that, I really don't, you know, see much opportunities for him because it's like a high-risk, low-reward of fighting Willie Monroe Jr. at this point, in my opinion. What you got on the world rank?
So on the BJS fight with Monroe, style-wise, it's a terrible fight. I mean, it could be a boring 12 round. And Billy Joe, in his last couple of fights, from Andy Lee to the Russian guy, he hasn't looked good. If he fights the same way he fights against those guys, He's going to lose to Willie Monroe. Here's the problem. Willie Monroe has the style where he has what I call a Rob style. He has the Paulie Malignaggi style, the style where he's going to be active, he's going to throw a lot of jabs, but he's not going to land anything hard. And what that means is he can do that for 12 rounds and look pretty decent. But if the guy throws one hard shot in that round, he might win the round because everything Willie Monroe did wasn't hard enough or didn't leave a mark. And what happens is you get a close fight, you get a 7-5, 6-6 fight, and he's going to get robbed. I call it the Paulie Malignaggi type fighter, where you do just enough to be in the fight, but you also do just enough to get robbed. In terms of the Mew thing, and my Twitter handle is called Boxing is a Business. And it always is, and it always will be the first thing in the game. And I think Lemieux looks at Cotto as a name, as an easy fight, and you're getting more money. If you're going to pay me to fight Miguel Cotto, basically right now he's a junior middleweight, I'm pretty sure Lemieux can't make 154. So Cotto's going to move up. You're going to get paid more to fight him than you are Jacobs. And it's an easier fight. To me, as sad as that sounds, it's a no-brainer. He can wait around and, you know, be inactive for another 6 months while he waits for Cotto. And the thing with Cotto is the Kamagai fight is going to take more out of him because of Kamagai's style. So you're getting a more less prime Cotto who's going to get – the Kamagai fight is going to be tough on him just because of Kamagai's style. So that's going to take something more off his career. So Lemieux is in a prime position where he doesn't have to really – you know, he can just wait around for the winner of the Canelo Triple G fight. I mean, I'm pretty sure Golden Boy has talked to him about facing the winner if he doesn't get Cotto. So he has plenty of options, and, you know, Jacobs isn't one of them.
Yeah, it just seems like, you know, none of those guys are really, you know, interested in giving Jacobs a shot. I wouldn't be surprised if the winner of Golovkin, Canelo, doesn't even call Daniel Jacobs' number. They'll, you know, end up seeing if they could get something with David Lemieux or Billy Joe Saunders or Miguel Cotto, you know, while somebody like a Daniel Jacobs or a newcomer to the middleweight division, Jamal Charlo, kind of like sits on the bench there for a good amount of time. And it may like end up being to where Charlo and Jacobs end up fighting each other and see who comes out as a winner from that. So looks like, you know, that whole rotation is where either they're going to have like a, you know, an undisputed middleweight champion there after you get the Canelo Golovkin winner and then Billy Joe Saunders, Willie Monroe Jr. winner to go up against each other, I guess, sometime next year, since, you know, these things will, you know, end up being on the same day with Saunders versus Monroe Jr. over in London. And then you have the Canelo Golovkin thing at the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas. So that's something there that, you know, we're going to be looking into within the middleweight division. Two more things here in the news front. One, seems like they are trying to get the fight put together for WBC light heavyweight champion Adonis Stevenson, and number one contender Elador Alvarez is trying to see if they could put that together for the fall. You know, it's been said Alvarez has been like the number one contender for almost 2 years now. So for them to, you know, finally get this fight put together, kind of like seems like it's news for some, as, you know, a lot of people have kind of criticized Adonis Stevenson for taking a lot of voluntary defenses of that WBC light heavyweight title. And also, you'll have another fight on September 16th that will have a title on the line. WBO lightweight champion Terry Flanagan will face the number one contender Felix Verdejo on September 16th. So Flanagan versus Verdejo there. So it'll seem like Verdejo will have this opportunity to win the WBO lightweight championship there. So I'm kind of like looking forward to that, to see if Verdejo will be able to step up to get that title there. I think that that's probably going to end up being in London there. Yep. Yeah, it'll be on that undercard of Billy Joe Saunders and William Monroe Jr. So it looked like it seemed like they got the contract agreed to, because they tried to get it put together at first. But at first, Felix Verdejo was offered $175,000 as a purse, while they requested for $450,000. But I think they just, you know, came to a compromise and kind of got him a figure that was in between those two numbers. But kind of like seeing how Verdejo will be able to step up here and take on Terry Flanagan over in the Copper Box in London. So, World Rank, your thoughts about what's happened with Madonna Stevenson and here with Verdejo getting his opportunity for that WBO lightweight championship?
Donis, I don't really care about, if you ain't fighting Ward, if y'all not fighting each other, I don't really care what you two guys do. In terms of the Verdejo fight, I mean, they've been propping this guy up for a while. His opportunity reminds me of Deontay Wilder getting his shot against Stavern. I think they picked the right guy at the right time, and I think they've been trying to buy their time to try to get an easy belt, and I think this is going to be the opportunity they're going to get that belt from Terry Flanagan, because, I mean, Puerto Rico really needs a new star, and they've been trying to push this guy for a minute, and they want him to be the next star, and I don't think they will put him in a fight that he can't, you know, that he can't win. So I expect him to take the belt just like Wilder took the belt from Stavern.
Now, with Verdejo there, as far as, like, if he's able to get this title here at lightweight, I guess you feel like they'll put him in favorable matchups for a good little while there to have him hold that WBO title for a little bit?
You know, of course,
like, build him up, because he might, like, follow the Miguel Cotto blueprint, but Cotto, like, of course, like, fought much tougher competition in those divisions, but maybe they kind of, like, see something in Verdejo that they could do as far as, like, a marketing, you know, marketing him similar to Miguel Cotto when he was coming up.
Yeah, that's the process. They want that Puerto Rican, that next Puerto Rican star, and he's the guy that's going to, that's the name that's been out there and they've been trying to push. He's been underwhelming in his fights, but they're still trying to push him and they're giving him this opportunity. And, you know, they're not going to throw him in there with Garcia or Linares or anybody like that after that. So they're going to try to milk it like Javonte Davis. They're going to try to give him known guys, but guys that they know that can't beat him. And they're going to try to, and I had this point about Canelo. You're trying to sell us stars. You're not making stars, but you're trying to force feed us stars, and I think that's what they're trying to do here. You're trying to make a star who's not really a star, so you're trying to give them easy touches and you're trying to build them up. I would like Flanagan to win, but I see the writing on the wall and I see how it's gonna go.
Yeah, I was just seeing if that would, you know, kind of be like something where it would put, you know, Verdejo, you know, out there as far as like one of those major guys within, I would say, like a top rank or whatever it is, to where he could, you know, build his name there within the lightweight division. Because, I mean, you still have Terrence Crawford there at super lightweight that, you know, is preparing to have that title unification fight with Julius Ndongo. So, you know, as long as, you know, he's still, you know, there in the super lightweight division, Verdejo wouldn't be able to move up. And like you were saying, he wouldn't fight like a Linares or Isha Jr. or anybody like that. Maybe they could get Luke Campbell is being involved in the WBO rankings, and you know, have Verdejo have another fight in the UK or something like that, and then build him up a little bit more within Puerto Rico to kind of like build his star potential. Mike Grady, what's your comments on this lightweight fight and what's happening with Adonis Stevenson?
I was doing something else, so I was sort of not listening. But, I mean, I hope Adonis Stevenson gets some good fights. And I could have sworn I heard them talking about trying to get Badu Jack to fight him.
I mean, that would have been possible as Badu Jack just, you know, moved into the light heavyweight division, and as like a former champion in the lower division, they kind of like put the guys as like number two in the rankings to where they move up to. Your potential fight between Stevenson and Badu Jack kind of would be something there, but It's like World Rank said, if we really don't have him facing Andre Ward, then it really isn't much of a overall interest for Stevenson fighting, because he really hasn't moved anywhere past Canada to fight anyone. So it's like he's not budging to, you know, have a big fight outside of Canada right now. So
yeah.
So even if he has like a fight, you know, against Badu Jack, I mean, it's still like something that'll still end up in Canada for him. So, it kind of like looks like his career is pretty much at a stalemate right now. One more thing here that, you know, I kind of like crossed into here in the overtime section. And this will, you know, kind of like get a little interest here from the panel. Seems like we're getting closer to having this fight end up being official. I mean, we've had like over the course of the past week or so talk about Deontay Wilder facing Dillian White, whether it'll be, you know, in the States or over in the UK or whatever it is. But regardless of any of those rumors or, you know, what Wilder's demand is or what Eddie Hearn is talking about or what Dillian White is talking about, that fight really can't happen soon because Monster Vern is steadfast in saying that he wants that rematch. And there's like recent video out with Romano Severn talking about what's going on, and he says that, you know, step-aside money that would have been offered by Eddie Hearn, he's not going to take it. He said that even if Eddie Hearn was offering $10 million, that he would turn it down. And that pretty much says that, yes, Severn, it's kind of like that same thing that we were talking about earlier with Anthony Durrell. It's like he doesn't want the money. He says it's more about the belt here in this case. But this kind of like seems very interesting here that Bermond Severn would say this, especially when, you know, he could have, you know, that much money to step aside, one, and then two, he would still end up fighting, you know, the winner of that potential fight between Wilder and White anyway. So kind of find that interesting coming from Bermond Severn in that case. So first go with World Rank, and then I'll get to Mike Grady on this.
I actually want to hear Mike Grady's take on it first.
Well, the only interesting
All right,
thing
go
is
ahead,
he's going to get knocked out. The only interesting thing is that he's going to get knocked out in the rematch, because he ain't gonna get tackled. He ain't gonna be able to tackle Deontay Wilder this time. Yeah, Deontay Wilder may or may not have regressed, but I still think in the second go around, he ain't gonna have the same amount of heart that he had last time. You know how Kovalev came into the fight and he was all, his adrenaline worked against him, because you know he was so like pumped and so into it and so like emotionally invested that pretty much like tired him faster, even with his win being bad. Like, all that adrenaline he was using, just, you know, just you could tell his emotional investment was not going to help him. He was too emotionally invested. And so I could see that same thing happening with Bermain Stiverne. With all this emotional investment he putting into trying to fight Deontay Wilder, he going to get knocked out. Same way Kovalev did. Too much emotional investment. Got to separate your mind from your body.
Yeah, you probably got to, like, separate all that outside talk and just, like, focus on Deontay Wilder there. All right, there, World Rank, what you got?
So the Stiverne fight, I think Stiverne has no chance. It's, you know, Wilder showed me the first time he can actually box. He boxed for 12 rounds. This time he's not going to play with Stiverne. He's going to get him out of there. In terms of the Dillon White fight, I want to see that fight. That's a fight that you can test Wilder in. It's a top 10 guy. He's rugged. He gives you the barometer for Joshua, because Joshua was in there with him, and Joshua had a struggle with him. So I think the Wilder should take the – you. I mean, you're getting, if somebody's offering you $10 million to fight somebody you probably think you can beat, why not take it? I think Heyman is behind this. I think Heyman's telling him, take the easy fight, take Stiverne. We're not going to, you know, – we're just going to wait around and see if we can get a bigger fight. Let's not play around with somebody who can give us the competition. So I think he's going to – they're just going to wait around and knock out Stiverne. And, I mean, it is what it is.
Dillon White gets knocked out too. So, I mean, it's – you Dillon White ain't challenging nobody.
I mean, at this stage, he's better than Stiverne. It's a better fight right now.
Okay, I agree with that. But still, relatively, I don't think he can put a candle to Deontay Wilder, especially if Deontay Wilder stays on the outside and just keep his jab moving and then hit him one time, because the dude going to get hurt.
Yeah, but Wilder struggles with
but
so.
My thing is like World Rank said, it's going to be an exciting fight, one. And then two, like, if it's in the UK, it really boosts Wilder as far as, like, his overall notoriety is concerned. So that's, you know, that's something there that I kind of, like, see where, you know, Wilder be able to, like, take that fight, whether it's, you know, right after this fight here with Bermain Stiverne or, you know, kind of like something later on this year, so that, you know, he'll be, you know, able to be active. I know they have, like, outside talk here with this thing with Anthony Joshua, and the thing is that they're kind of doing the same thing as far as, like, these mandatories is concerned about, you know, not being able to sidestep these mandatories. So, you know, even if there was, like, a fight between Deontay Wilder and Anthony Joshua that would come, you know, within the first or within 6 months or so, one of those guys that's a mandatory contender will step up and say, hey, wait a minute, what about me? You know, so it's like, you know, now he's like saying, well, he's got to make sure that he gets those mandatories done. So do that first, clear that up, and then, you know, go ahead and fight Deontay Wilder sometime next year here. But for me, yeah, I kind of see like a Wilder versus Dillon White fight as a good fight, something that Wilder would be favored in, something that Wilder would be able to win. And if he's able to, you know, go ahead and get that fight in the UK, it would be, you know, a lot, you know, very beneficial to him. So I would say, like, why not, whether, you know, this Stiverne fight is going to happen or not, you know, because we really haven't seen any, you know, official announcements as far as, like, what Wilder's next fight is going to be there. So that's, like, something that I'm kind of, like, trying to wait for to see what Deontay Wilder is going to do there in that case.
But I would imagine he would probably be licking his chops to fight Dillon White, though. He would. That's something that he would want to do. I feel like that's what he said, too, but I'm just reiterating. I think that, you know, outside of Stiverne trying to put a monkey wrench in the business, you're right, it's too much upside not to fight him and then make people clamor for him and Joshua if he beats Dillian Whyte, you know, in spectacular fashion.
Yeah. Yep. Kind of like trying to see if I could look at something here. It was looking like I'm trying to see here that in this fight card at the Barclays Center that is, you know, headlined by Mikey Garcia versus Adrian Broner. One of the fights that was going to be on that card was Jared Herd versus Austin Trout. But kind of like looking at this schedule here, it kind of like seems like that fight is not on, and they replaced it with Jamal Charlo versus George Sebastian Heelan, which is, you know, there within the WBC middleweight rankings, both of them are. And also, one heavyweight fight that I'm interested in seeing here is Gerald Washington, who, like I said, got knocked out by Deontay Wilder, will be going up against Jarrell Big Baby Miller. So that fight I'm really interested in seeing because Jarrell Miller is not in the WBC rankings, but he's in, you know, the other ones, the WBA, IBF, and WBO. And so here he could, you know, try to see if he could get back into the WBC rankings because at one point, I think at one point he was part of the WBC rankings, but due to that, I think it was the clean boxing program thing that kind of took him out of those WBC rankings. So I don't know if he's like officially enrolled in it or not, but he, but in the meantime, he does have this fight coming up against Gerald Washington at the Barclays Center. So y'all thoughts about this fight here?
I think, yeah, that's a nice fight. Should be a competitive fight. Two guys. So I haven't seen enough from Miller to know what he has, but I think that Gerald Washington is skillful, you know, relatively speaking. And even though I think Deontay Wilder came into the to the match like with the wrong mindset, and he was kind of like kidding around and all that good stuff, yeah, it should be a good match. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of, you know, looking forward to it.
Right. World rank?
I mean, I don't really got nothing to say on the fight. I mean, it's a decent fight, but I don't really have, you know. I wonder, I mean, it'll be a good barometer to tell where Miller's at. But other than that, I mean, obviously, Gerald Washington isn't going to play in the picture of the heavyweight division. So I just wonder what Miller will look like. Will he come in shape?
Yeah, that was my thing that I was gonna watch for in this particular fight is, you know, what type of shape that Jarrell Miller will be coming into, you know, in this fight here against Gerald Washington. Because I mean, you know, Washington is a big guy, he's taller, you know, has like a longer, yeah, you know, longer reach. So you'll have to see like how much Jarrell Miller is gonna be able to work to, you know, get into the inside of Gerald Washington or try to see if he could get an opening to get like a big right hand on Gerald Washington and see if he's going to be able to, you know, get a connection on him. So that's something that I'm going to be looking out for here in this particular fight between these two, you know. So that's something that, you know, I'll kind of like look into to see how that's going to be shaping up there on July 29th over there at the Barclays Center there. So on that note, pretty much in this episode of the show, once again, giving thanks to D-Flowers for coming in to talk about this product. And like I said, I'll put in the information for how you can order the sweat cream on the social media networks that we have here for the Boxing Source. Be sure to tune in the Go Long Media channel for Nicole Hart, Truth on Sports, Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time with Matthew Long. Like I say at the end of every show, Point of Boxing is a hit and not get hit, not to stand and trade. On that note, I'm out. Thanks for calling, guys.